You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yeah, that was right, the second time. Joining me is Tom Drowdy. Tom, good morning. How are you?
Great, Mac. Doing well. Always a pleasure to be with you.
All right. Well, thank you, first of all. Always thanks for doing this. How did you decide on teaching as after, you know, you obviously do great things in the Marine Corps? How did you how did you decide on teaching as a career afterwards?
Really a combination of things. I was so impressed with the fantastic teachers that I had growing up, primarily the priests and nuns and brothers, the Catholic grade school and high school, and then...
Hold on, brothers?
Yes, uh-huh.
Did you go to a Christian brothers school?
Oh, no, this is primarily a Viatorian.
Okay.
They have both priests as well as brothers, and then
okay.
The sisters were of various orders, the Sisters of Loretta, primarily, but they were just you know, such tremendously dedicated and focused individuals, and such selfless sacrifice on their part. And I thought, you know, this really makes a difference. You know, the ability to impact a youngster, and I recall oftentimes that successful people have been asked, "What is the major factor in your success?" And they come up with the four words of, "There was this teacher."
Mm-hmm.
And so that had often been the case with me. And then I guess General Lejeune's adage, you know, Marine seniors to juniors, to be teacher to scholar, and even more so father to son. And then I guess lastly, that I'd been so blessed to experience the things that I have and survive that it just didn't seem right to kind of keep that all within me and to not share some of that with youngsters who might benefit from some of those experiences and views. So anyway, all of that kind of drove me to the notion of teaching. I also had taught at the Naval Academy. I was an instructor, of course, at Fort Bragg with the Special Forces. And so I just enjoyed that aspect of being able to help open up discussion and help folks come to critical thinking skills and come to conclusions on their own based upon facts rather than just emotion. So long answer to your question, but there's in Canterbury Tales the description of the scholar, and the adage is, "And gladly did he learn and gladly teach." And I guess that's been the case with me. I gladly learned as a student and then as a Marine officer, and now I gladly teach as well.
I'm curious, as you were talking about your career, when you look at your career, what do you think were what was the high point to you of your career? I mean, because you
commanding
did,
a rifle in Vietnam.
That was the high point of your career.
Yeah, commanding a rifle company in Vietnam was really the high point. That was that is the reason I came in the Marine Corps, was to lead troops and if possible, if necessary, in combat, and to be a rifle company commander in Vietnam was truly the high point. And you know, that defined me as a man, as a husband, a father, all of those things, to have that awesome responsibility, but also that that tremendous opportunity to lead, you know, great men in combat. So, you know, I've had, you know, other positions that were interesting and rewarding and so forth, but none that was truly a highlight that could compare with commanding Marines in combat.
Forgive me if I've asked you this before, but I'll ask it again. I have two sons that are Marine infantry officers. If we were sitting around a dinner, the four of us, and I said, sir, give them one lesson that you would say you have to know this before you go to war, what would that lesson be? Only one.
Yeah, only one.
Only one.
Know yourself. And that means knowing what you know and what you don't know. and along with that, how you compensate for the things that you don't know or what are not your strong points, but to not try to fool yourself first, and then even worse, to try to fool others into thinking that you're something that you're not. And so that's, I think, is the, I guess, is half of Sun Tzu's, you know yourself and know the enemy, but the first part is knowing yourself. And
give me an example of how you know yourself. So, I mean, it sounds Zen-like. So break it down Barney style for Marines. What does that mean?
It means to take a critical look at your capabilities and limitations, and to realize what you're good at, and that you want to continue to improve on that, and then what you're not good at, and to compensate for that, or to fill in those gaps that are necessary in order to be an effective combat leader. All of us are not good at everything, but the ones who are really good are those who know what they're good at, and then also know what they're not good at, and then seek assistance or other developments in order to fill in those gaps. So, you know, whether it's analyzing a problem, or communication skills, or use of supporting arms, map reading, weapons employment, all those things that, as a result of basic school, we should be very good at. But
right.
Some are better than others, and I think it's necessary, just part of any leader's self-reflection of, what do I do well, and therefore I should do that as well as I can. And those things that I don't do well, how do I compensate for that through other means?
All right. And if we just walk the dog and just say, let's just say that I have problems. I don't have problems calling for fire, and I don't have problems with supporting arms. I do have a problem sometimes when we do get engaged. I focus on the maneuver piece to the neglect sometimes of the supporting arms. So I need to have somebody. I need to have ex Smith next to me. Smith's got to know supporting arms and not be afraid to yell at me and say, sir, we need to shoot this now. So are you talking about things like that? I may be good at it standing alone in a classroom, but standing alone in a classroom is not employing the unit on the ground. It's not making sure the guy gets medevaced, or at least gets buddy aid until we can get him medevaced, and all the other things that are going into this event simultaneously. Is knowing yourself like that in that dimension?
Yeah, I think that's a good example. But the leader sets the example in so many respects, and one of which is the leader truly selfless, and is the leader truly humble enough to realize that he or she does not know everything.
Right.
And, what's the leader's, and I always use this as a test, that the leader establishes the culture of his or her organization, I believe, the first time he or she receives bad news. Now, we all need the truth, and sometimes the truth is bad news, but what does the leader do with it? And the leader who hands the messenger's head to him, that's probably the last time he or she's going to get the truth, which is at least the bad news part of the truth. So, that culture that's established that says, listen, I'm responsible. I have the authority. I have the accountability. But we're all in this together, and we're a team. And so we work together as a team. And I, as the leader, am not going to reject, your comments, your recommendations. There are times when I simply can't because of the heat of the moment. But other times, I'm not the perfect example of a leader. There are things that I need help with, and I think good leaders recognize that and encourage those who can assist them in becoming even better. But it all gets down to knowing yourself, and I guess focusing on being good rather than looking good.
What kind of, to that end, as a leader in combat, did you have a certain way that you would sit down with the leadership of your company after an engagement, or maybe when you had time to go over things? How did you evaluate? Did you do that on your own? How did you evaluate? Did you do that with your lieutenants? How did you evaluate the group performance? Because there's so many, I mean, it happens so fast. There's things that happen that you don't even see, you don't even know about until somebody else tells you. Did you have a way that you did that as you attempted to get better as a group?
Sure. And whether you call it an after action session or whatever, right. But I was always impressed with the Raiders philosophy, and that was when the Raiders got together, there's certainly respect that they showed for their seniors, but no one was dismissed because of rank. And so an idea, recommendation, or an observation, it's all going to be taken seriously because, this is, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but, a deadly serious profession. And for us to stand on rank or image or that notion rather than, hey, we're all in this together, what can we learn from one another? And then to exact that information so that next time we're better. Next time we don't make that mistake. Next time we realize, and it's in the case of where, heard that smart people learn from their mistakes. Brilliant people learn from other people's mistakes.
Right.
Don't know those mistakes unless they're exposed and analyzed, and then you move on and become better as a result. But I think it gets down to communications, but communications with the belief that knowing yourself, you're not going to be hesitant to be open to discussion, to analysis, commentary by your Marines. And great ideas don't necessarily require a bar or an oak leaf or whatever. Oftentimes they come with a single chevron or no chevrons.
My guest this morning, retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Tom Droughty. We're talking about kind of got sidetracked by a discussion about him teaching and then things he'd tell my sons before they went to combat. One more question, and then I want to change gears. Along those lines, the Special Forces, and you mentioned the Raiders, which were certainly at the very precursor of that in World War II, they had this concept of this horizontal organization as opposed to vertical. Line infantry units tend to be vertical organization. Is there a combination of horizontal and vertical that creates an optimum situation? And is there a trick to being intellectually horizontal, maybe command vertical, and what is that? So your thoughts on a combination of horizontal and vertical that creates optimum information flow learning, yet still answers the mail relative to being a vertical organization?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm sure many consultants would love to jump in with that, not only from a military standpoint, but from a business standpoint also.
Right.
I think it gets down to understanding in every organization there has to be accountability, and the senior person is the one who's responsible, accountable for what happens or fails to happen, and that has to be understood. That this isn't a democracy. As I used to tell my children from time to time, I defend democracy. I don't practice it. To have someone who's in charge. But with that senior person, again, I talk about the culture. The culture is how you do things. What you stand for. What you don't stand for. And that senior person establishes then what that merging or melding, if you will, of a horizontal and vertical situation. In a command situation, everybody knows who the boss is, but that command can be extremely effective or not so effective based upon what the boss knows or what the boss needs to hear. And if that boss establishes a culture of I am the perfect human being, and therefore I'm the commanding officer, and don't bother me with details, and specifically don't ever tell me when something's screwed up, you know, then that outfit is, first of all, doomed for failure in my opinion, but like, it's not going to be a very happy outfit. And I understand we're not a social welfare organization, but by the same token, we're units that are composed of human beings who have this deadly profession called the Marine Corps. But that doesn't mean that we can't, you know, be as professional and as helpful and as able to want to get the job done, to take care of one another, you know, not only side by side, but up and down the chain as well. You know, juniors have responsibilities. We all understand senior responsibility to juniors. How about juniors' responsibility to seniors? You know, I've had commanding officers that I've had to, you know, felt necessary to go in and say, sir, I think this is screwed up. It's a one-on-one situation, so it's not to embarrass anyone or to undermine the authority. But, you know, out of loyalty, you've got to do that, I think. But once again, those were bosses that I knew I could do that without hopefully getting my head handed to me. But it's a culture established by the senior person, and I think it gets back to your first question. You've got to know yourself, and I think that's the starting point.
All right. Tom Droughty, my guest. We've been talking about leadership here, leadership in combat, the highlight of his career, talked about being a rifle company commander in Vietnam. What was the company, sir?
The company was Mike Company, 3rd Battalion, 7th Marines.
Mike Company.
So Company M, an outfit that no longer exists when we went from four rifle companies to three.
We're gonna switch gears. Sir, I gotta take a quick break. Just hold on, right? And we'll come back and we'll talk. I'm curious about your thoughts on coexisting with fundamental Islam. Can we do it? Or inevitably does that put us on a collision course? So we're gonna take a quick break. More of my guest this morning, retired Marine Brigadier General, Tom Droughty, coming up next here on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good. Past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed. I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. ...7:41 here on the west coast of the United States on a Tuesday, second day of May. Mike McNamara with you, starting our 12th month of broadcasting. Pretty excited. We're gonna make it through a year. That's good stuff. So Tom Droughty joins me here on a Tuesday, gracious enough to hang with us. And so here's my question for you. Tell everybody what you teach, the different courses that you teach.
Oh, sure, Mac. Well, congratulations. What a in your cap. You've got to be so proud of what you've accomplished and have done what you're continuing to do. So, bravo, Zulu, or well done to you.
Well, thank you. You know, sir, I got a letter on Friday from somebody I've never met, but it was almost written. It was what I had in mind when we started this, and that is, hey, I learned about your podcast recently. I've begun to listen. I now consider you a friend, a brother in arms. It's a place where I go that's a warm place for me, where I hear the voices of the past in my life. But most important, I hear Marines talking about Marine stuff. And it's one of the best parts of my day now. And just want to thank you for helping me reconnect, because the things that you talk about, the discipline, the values, are things that have been variables in my life since I left the Marine Corps. And what I find is I get a dose of that now on All Marine Radio, and it helps me in my life in a variety of different ways. So thank you for the reminder. So it was just one of those things that, you know, you conceive of something and you hope people will get it. And, you know, as you get more and more of those emails, it's pretty cool. So I can't tell you how pleased it makes me. And just excited about making it better and better and better, adding more and different voices to it. And so thank you, sir. And you've been a big part of it. Smart guys with great leadership experiences, great combat experience, but also with, that aren't afraid to look at a subject in the cold, sunlight of day and say that's good or bad, and not always defending the cause and not always, ideal fights, if you will, in terms of, they're not afraid to put the nation before anybody's idea. So I think that makes a great program. So thank you for being a part of it. And you've been gracious with your time throughout the course of the year. So thank you. How do we coexist with Islamic, with a nation that's fundamentally Islamic? Well, hold on. Let me stop. What do you teach?
I teach two courses on Mac. One is called The Modern Middle East, and we start off with Muhammad and come all the way forward to the Islamic State. So it's to really understand the modern Middle East, and of course with that, everything that, or not everything, but try to touch on the important aspects that have taken place in the Middle East from the days of Muhammad. So, of course, what is interesting for these students is the Desert Storm aspect that I was a part of, as well as the fights going on, excuse me, right now. Then the other course that I just put together is called Why We Fight and How We Fight U.S. Wars. And it's not really a history course, but, of course, you can't teach that without teaching history, which I find so many of our great youngsters are historical illiterates.
Right.
And it's not their fault. It's our fault for letting that happen. So we cover really the United States from our founding to the present time. And in both courses, I bring in guest speakers that I think will help. One, really a delight, is somebody come in and talk about the law of land warfare and what, you know, how we may not fight. I also have a reporter come in and talk about the role of the press and how we fight and why we fight. Retired Colonel Tony Gain,
mm-hmm.
who was a Schwarzkopf's operations officer in Desert Storm, was one
right.
of my guest speakers. So all of these are designed to help in that regard. So those are the two courses. Then I have another one that I taught and will teach again next spring on Vietnam. And once again, bring in guest speakers to help.
How does the United States coexist with fundamental Islamic nations? And I think we certainly appear to be on a collision course with Turkey. Turkey continues to skew towards, I'm not sure what you'd call it, but certainly skew towards a more fundamentalist Islamic state. Can we coexist with them peacefully? How do we do that?
Yeah, I believe that we can. And, you know, for many years we have. What has muddied the waters, and not a very good analogy, but the rise of the Islamic terrorists is what has skewed this relationship.
Okay.
Before this, you know, we go back to when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait. The aspect is one of those who went to the king of Saudi Arabia and said, you know, I've got a lot of experience and a number of fighters, and we've been very successful, and so let me assist you in this, was a guy named Osama bin Laden. And, of course, King Saudi Arabia said, very interesting, how many tanks do you have, how much artillery, and so forth. Well, he rightfully chose the king that was to have the U.S. Protect Saudi Arabia, eject the Iraqis from Kuwait, and so forth. But with that came the infuriation to Saddam that here was an Islamic leader who not only allowed but had invited infidels into his country. So here we have kind of the two aspects of Islam. The leader who realized that he has a need and is not hesitant to seek assistance, and of course the UN was part of that with this resolution, and the extremists in the form of Osama bin Laden, who saw that as an insult to Islam and therefore declared war, not many people know that, against the United States in 1996. To answer your question, Islam, as I have learned it and studied, it is not anti-U.S., is not anti, but the extremists are forces to be reckoned with in the same way that the extremists of whatever religious category you put them in, Christian, Buddhist, Jewish, extremists of any kind, are going to be troublemakers, and they do not want to exist other than under their own really deformed ideology.
All right, give me an example of a nation that we've a fundamentalist Islamic nation that has sought to export that fundamentalism that we have peacefully coexisted with?
Well, Saudi Arabia has been one that we've existed with, but after the siege of Mecca in 1979, basically said fundamentalists can no longer be a part of plots against the royal kingdom, but will turn a blind eye towards other plots. That doesn't mean we've gone to war against Saudi Arabia. For a number of reasons, we've existed with them and peacefully for the most part, but the underlying support has been from Saudi Arabia for many of the threats that we've experienced. But that doesn't mean that we're, and this is a common propaganda point of the Islamic State, this notion that we are at war with Islam, and that is absolutely not the case. We are at war with the Islamic extremists, the Islamic terrorists, such as the Islamic State, which declared a caliphate and holds territory, holds possessions, holds money, although fortunately dwindling at this point. So getting back to this point, our enemy is not Islam. Our enemy are the extremists of Islam.
So any nation, so we would categorize them as, so extremists of any color, whether they be communists that seek to export that and destabilize peaceful commerce of free nations, we would categorize that in the same way. And Islam poses no greater threat than any of the rest of them.
I'm sorry.
Islam poses no greater threat. Islamic fundamentalists, I don't want to say Islam because I'm not talking about the religion. Islamic fundamentalist nations, let me use Iran as an example. Islamic fundamentalist nation that seeks to export its philosophy and disrupt the peaceful interaction of nations, we would hold them in the same view as we would as anybody else, any other nation, no matter what their philosophy was that would seek to disrupt the same. Does that make sense?
No, I kind of lost you. Let me rephrase, restate my position or my belief. Those extremists, such as the Islamic State, are truly our enemy. Those who are fomented and supported by Islamic State, such as Iran, are our enemy. Those terrorist groups, those who use terror against us, against in any country, are certainly the enemy. But there has to also be understanding that the basic religious underlying notion, if you will, of Islam is not the enemy. Let's go to the Irish Republican Army. Were they terrorists? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Does that mean that we are against the Irish? Or against Catholicism, because most of them, absolutely not, but this was a terrorist a part of that was conducting terrorism in Northern Ireland and elsewhere.
My guest, Tom Drowdy. So it's really what we have an issue with as a nation relative to foreign policy is we have an issue with any nation that would seek to destabilize a part of the world that we have a strategic interest in, and over the course of the last 20 years, those states have tended to be, by historical coincidence, Islamic states, and that essentially Islamic states pose no greater risk to us or no less risk to us than any other state does. It's simply that activity, and for whatever reason, it's landing smack dab in the Middle East with Islamic fundamentalism at this time.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay. So what is the – because what we hear and is you will convert one way or the other to Islam. You will convert by the sword. You will convert by your own brain, but you will convert. So we hear those things, which, you know, is crazy talk. What is the rise? What gives the rise to this? And then what finances the spread in the world?
Well, I think what gives rise to it is this distorted belief of what constitutes the premise of religion. What will constitute salvation? Whether it's in the Christian or the Islamic heritage, and for some, the belief that jihad. Which is not a bad word. Jihad is a struggle, and there are four types of jihad. One is, you know, with yourself. The second is with your mind. The third is with the tongue, and then the fourth is with the sword. And the sword of jihad has been used in the past for maintaining territory, and now to its extreme use of terrorism. But jihad is basically a struggle. And so that word has been kind of perverted in our today's lexicon, but it is a case of, you know, look at the American Islams, and I'm not big on hyphenating American for anything, but those of the Islamic faith who are resident in the United States, yeah, there have been some cases of. What they call the lone wolf or the known wolf, but by and large, the America has done a tremendous job of assimilating Islamic immigrants to our country. Many who serve proudly and well in the armed forces of the United States. So, right. You know, to designate them as terrorists because they're Islamic, and I know you're not doing that, Mac, but right. Some people would, and. You know, we have right now in the Marine Corps a situation of investigation will result in knowing a court-martial of a recruit down at Paris Island who's Islamic, and the results of the hazing and brutality perpetrated on him because of his religion. You know, this is an American who happened to be Islamic who instead becomes targeted by folks who just don't know what they're doing and what they're talking about.
Sir, I have to leave it at that. I'd love to continue the discussion because it is the image of Islam is in the United States. We struggle with it because of the last 17 years of every time we seem to be in a conflict, it is with, you know, an Islamic nation. And so I'd love to continue this, and maybe in a week you can come back on and do Islam 101 for us.
Sure. I'd love to. Just keep in mind, after I know this is before your time, but the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
And what we did in this country to Japanese Americans, we interned them in basically camps. And you would say today, but wait a minute, these were Americans, these who happened to be Buddhists, but we had ascribed to them as a race of a terrorist, a mortal enemy. Yeah, we declared war as a result of that attack, but, you know, the understanding and acceptance of what is the underlying faith or belief of the various religions, I think, is critical to understanding them. And not getting sidetracked by the extremists who would want nothing more than to have us morph into or devolve into this notion of our fight is against Islam, which it is not.
All right. Would you mind over the course of maybe 2 or 3 weeks coming on and kind of doing Islam, a little bit of a mini Islam history for us?
Love you.
Okay, I'll give you a call, and I'd love to do that because I've sat through some classes. I'd be curious to listen to you, and how you do it, sir, if you don't mind.
Not a I'd be honored.
All right. All right, sir. First of all, thank you very much for the visit and the leadership advice. Always appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. Look forward to our chats. And again, well done. Congratulations, Bravo Zulu and Semper Fidelis.
All right. Thank you, sir. That is retired Marine Corps Brigadier General, currently a professor at St. Leo's University as well as the University of South Florida, and that is Tom Drowdy, a regimental commander. I was not in his regiment. I was on the same camp, so I kind of sort of consider him one of my old regimental commanders. You can tell. Nonetheless, a great man, a great human being. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Alex Holling is going to join us. Alex, a writer at SOFRA. And we met him a week ago, and so we'll take a break. We'll get Alex on the hook, and we'll talk about some of the work he's done. He's written about Facebook comment section, which I think everybody would go, oh God, make it go away. I'm curious about his. I want to talk to him about Marines United. He's written some stuff about Syria, and I also want to. He's got a piece out that he did about improving your Glock without going to a gunsmith or breaking the bank. So we'll talk about all that coming up next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. Right here on the only place that you'll hear All Marine Radio, and that is the All Warrior Radio Network.